doing this, or are you doing
I'll
this?
Do it.
Okay.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
Unless you want to.
No. Okay. I mean, this was the one I was least dunced about.
Okay. It's an adjective now?
This is for everything.
What does it even mean?
I don't know.
I guess it means excited. What's up? This is Movies on Up. Beauty isn't everything. It's the only thing. And I am seated across from the only co-host I would want sitting over there, Mr. Dave Becella.
The most beautiful.
Sure. I'll let you have that. That's Mr. Dave. I am Ryan. We are Movies on Up. Beauty isn't everything. It's the only thing. Is not only true, it is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, you can send your guess to us in one of the following ways. You can email us, moviesonup@gmail.com, and every 6 months, Dave will check that. You can tweet your guess to us on the Twitter, @moviesonup, or you could send your guess to our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup. If you are correct, and if we choose you, we will send the wonderful Movies on Up prize package your way, probably in about 6 to 8 months. If you are a fan of Sofia Coppola, you don't have to wait that long to see her new movie. It is out this week. It is The Beguiled, starring Nicole Kidman, Elle Fanning, and Kirsten Dunst. As fun as it would be in maybe another 5 to 6 years to do an Elle Fanning list, which would be fantastic. And if you want to have a hint as to where the tagline comes from, it's one of hers. We thought Kirsten Dunst has been around long enough and been in enough big movies that we wouldn't have any trouble picking out five that we enjoy, or at least be worth the exercise to try and figure out.
Movies that we could mention.
Right. Sometimes, in our head, these lists are going to either be fun or easy. Sometimes they turn out to be neither fun nor easy. Sometimes we find out we don't like Dwayne Johnson as much as we think we do, or at least his movies. Sometimes we find out, you know what, damn it, we really love Toni Collette movies. It just happens that way. I had no trouble finding five Kirsten Dunst movies that I really like.
Yeah, my top five I, like, love. Like, yeah. They're good movies. They're movies that
I recommend all of these to people. Yeah, often.
I like them. And there are two that I left, well, one and a half that I left off that would be also-rans that I didn't even bother. But then there's five also-rans that are, if I had to swap them out with a four or five, I could. That'd be fine. But I've never thought of her as like, oh, I love Kirsten Dunst. But, you know, my five favorites I really, really like.
So why don't you tell me, what is your fifth favorite?
My fifth favorite is kind of what introduced her to the world. She was nominated for a Golden Globe. I believe to this day it's her only Golden Globe nomination.
No, she was nominated for two Golden Globes. Not one, but two. It was a TV Golden Globe.
Oh, that doesn't
count. For Fargo.
Yeah, she was really good on Fargo. But her only movie Golden Globe is from way back in the beginning, from 1994, An Interview with a Vampire, directed by Neil Jordan, based off an Anne Rice book. Screenplay by Anne Rice as well. As much as it's not her movie, she kind of steals the show. I mean, you have Brad Pitt, Christian Slater, Tom Cruise,
Robert Wall,
Antonio Banderas, Christian Slater. You have all these people, and it's this really big time cast in the mid 90s. And you have this little girl who kind of almost steals the show, at the very least, like hangs with the big boys. She's really, really good in this movie.
You know, I'm going to make a... I feel like everybody watches Game of Thrones, so you're going to know exactly what I'm talking about.
Arya Stark?
No, she's Lyanna Mormont.
I don't know who that is.
She's that little girl that always stands up and is like, quit being a pussy!
Oh, at the North?
Yeah, that girl.
Yeah.
Because she's young, and like her presence is just like...
Isn't the dude that had the stone stuff, isn't his last name Mormont?
Yeah.
Are they related?
They are! We're getting into some stuff here.
How is she related to him? What is she to him?
They're from the same... I don't know exactly what it is. She's
just same family, but it's not like his niece or something?
I mean, it might be.
I didn't realize they were related.
Niece or granddaughter. But
yeah, go on.
People are just afraid of her. And in Interview with a Vampire, she's terrifying. In a movie that's full of sexy vampires, she's one of the scary ones.
Yeah, she's not sexy.
Not a sexy she's vampire in
not
this
not a sexy 12-year-old
no.
vampire in this movie.
No, she's a terrifying vampire.
But she's really, really good. And like I said, in a movie where, you know, you're talking early 90s, like Brad Pitt wasn't Brad
not quite
Pitt
yet, but Tom Cruise
point.
Was.
Tom Cruise
Christian
was.
Christian Slater was a big deal. Antonio Banderas or whatever the fuck like you tried to say. Those were all legit heartthrobby famous dudes, and Brad Pitt was certainly on his way to becoming that. Yeah.
Christian Slater stepped into this movie for River Phoenix and did it for free.
I've heard that.
I bet he regretted that because this movie made a good bit of money.
It did. My number five.
Oh, that was my number five. That was you talked like the whole time. I'm cool. I'll just talk on your number five.
Fair enough. Because my number five is going to be on your list, but it's going to be higher. I even let you go first, and I still get to steal. I believe it's your number three. It is my number five. It is directed by Leslie Headland from 2012, Bachelorette, starring the aforementioned Kirsten Dunst, Isla Fisher, Lizzie Kaplan. This might be as hipster as I sound all year. But just 1 year after Bridesmaids came out, I actually think we got a movie that was just as good, but somehow less appreciated. And it's probably because people felt like they had just watched this movie. As fun as Melissa McCarthy was, and as fun as her scenes were in Bridesmaids, and I would say that she absolutely steals that movie, I think Lizzie Kaplan's got a couple scenes in this that are just as fun. Their characters are nowhere near similar, but she's got a couple speeches that really just make me giggle. Add in Marsden and Adam Scott. It's not their movie, but they're not just there because we need a couple, like, handsome-looking dudes. Like, they're good, and they're funny. They have good parts in their own right. Everybody gets a moment here. The ones that aren't Lizzie Kaplan and Kirsten Dunst, I don't think everybody else is just an afterthought. Like, I think Ellie Kemper was wasted in Bridesmaids.
Completely wasted.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's right. She was in that movie.
Wendy McClendon Covey.
Right. Those are the two that always come to mind. Like, everybody remembers Melissa McCarthy, and she got the bump from that movie. But those other two women, phenomenal. They were wasted. If you want to pick somebody that kind of got launched out of this, I don't know if this was what did Rebel Wilson. Probably more Pitch Perfect.
But she's really good in this.
Right. She was really good in this. To me, she was, of the people you didn't know, she might have been the one that jumped out. I was like, holy shit, that girl's really funny. This is certainly not the first comedy that Dunst headlined. We may see one higher up on Dave's list. But I think this one was played for laughs, whereas the other one I'm thinking of wasn't necessarily. In this one, she's kind of the straight lady in it. She's letting everybody else be really, really funny. But you can't have comedy without a straight man. And I think she was fantastic as that in this movie.
Yeah, this was my number four, so it transitions pretty smoothly. And I mentioned it a couple weeks ago when I was talking about Fun Mom Dinner compared to Bad Moms. Right. This is the same thing. This is a better movie than Bridesmaids. It's not just made for mainstream laughs. There's a legit character study to it, and there's arcs. There's more to it than there was with Bridesmaids. But it came out later. It didn't have as big of a release. But still really good. And Adam Scott's in both of them. But yeah. I like Rebel Wilson in this. Isla Fisher, I adore in almost anything she's in. And then Lizzie Kaplan. I love Lizzie Kaplan. Not enough to watch those Now You See Me movies. But I do really like Lizzie Kaplan. I think she's in those. I won't watch to find out.
I think so. There's a girl that looks an awfully lot like her that I've seen in the trailers.
It's really funny. But it's a different movie than Bridesmaids. But it's very easy to understand why they would be lumped together.
Yeah.
And the parallels between that and Fun Mom Dinner are so ridiculous. But it's really, really good. And it's a good movie. Where I think Bridesmaids, I don't think is a good movie. I think it's a competent comedy.
Yeah.
This is a good movie.
To keep referencing the episode a couple weeks ago, but I talked about Tammy and how, like, there were arcs in that which made it a good movie and not just a good comedy. They weren't just trying to, like, oh, here's a bit. Or here's another one, here's a joke, 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 joke. There was growth with the characters. I mean, Lizzie Kaplan's character comes a long way, so does Kirsten Dunst's. So I kind of do think Bachelorette's a better movie than Bridesmaids. Even as I was typing that, I was like, is that really that outlandish of a statement? But I guess, you know, if the two of us in this room think it, then it's just so.
Oh, yeah, I don't need to go now.
You don't, because that was your number four.
I haven't talked like at all this episode. I dig it. Keep it up. Keep going.
My number four is a movie that I think you like, and I could see it being about this place in your list. It is from 2016, directed by Jeff Nichols. It's Midnight Special, starring Mike Shannon, Joel Edgerton, Jaden Lieberherr, and Kirsten Dunst. I don't think this movie ended up being exactly what I hoped for. Jeff Nichols is a dude that does some really, really great stuff, but not really for a mass audience. This seemed like it could have enough in it to interest like an average movie fan and expose them to a guy that's really a phenomenal director. That didn't happen. Instead, we got just another really good Jeff Nichols movie stuffed with some really great performances, which is what you get in a Jeff Nichols movie. Michael Shannon is his usual intense self. Joel Edgerton's Lucas is wonderful. He's the right-hand man on this crazy mission, and he's the only one that's really on this journey that has made the choice to be there, and he continuously chooses throughout the movie to stay on the mission. He does some things that he might not normally do, but he's making these choices all the time, and he sticks right there with Michael Shannon and young Lieberherr. And this dude, it's one thing to turn in a good performance as a child actor, but it's a completely different thing. Not unlike what Kirsten Dunst did in Interview with the Vampire. She was a young actor surrounded by a lot of established, super successful male actors. This guy was going up against Michael Shannon and Joel Edgerton, who were both phenomenal. And not only did he hold his own, he was right up there with those guys. He may have been better because he was that good. And Kirsten Dunst doesn't have a giant role in it. She doesn't come around till, oh gosh, it's certainly after the halfway point. She's Michael Shannon's like estranged wife. But when she does show up, she has some really good scenes at the climax. And I think that the chemistry with her and Lieberherr was great as well. That kid is really, really good. Michael Shannon's character is kind of the same from the beginning to the end. But you get to see a change from Kirsten Dunst. In the relatively limited time she's in the movie, there is a little bit of movement with her. It's a good movie. It wasn't the commercial success that I had hoped that it was. But I still think if you like watching good performances, this is a good one.
We talk about arcs. Michael Shannon is the best at being the same at the beginning and end of a movie, but everybody catches up to him. In Midnight Special, there's no real arc. He's the crazy guy at the beginning.
But he was right.
But by the
along.
End, everybody else is crazy. Right. Same with Take Shelter. He's fantastic in The Night Before. I had this in my also-rans because her part is so small. I do like this. I like this movie more than you did. I love this movie. But I love Edgerton and I love Shannon. I think those are two of the most intense dudes out there right now. And I think Edgerton has this insane ability to elevate whoever he's with. He's so good that I think he just raises everybody, whether it's face to face with Bateman and The Gift or Hardy and Warrior, like
Rebecca Hall.
Yeah. He's so good in everything. And to see him and Shannon, who have this same kind of intensity, it was very tense, a lot of the scenes with them, just because there's this just hidden rage within both of them. You're just waiting for it to come out, and they both hide it so well. I really did like this, but I didn't put it in my top five. I figured you might. My number three could be number one on so many lists. From 2004, written by Charlie Kaufman and Michelle Gondry, directed by Michelle Gondry, starring Jim Carrey, Kate Winslet, Elijah Wood, Mark Ruffalo, David Cross, Kristen Dunst, Tom Wilkinson, Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind. This movie is damn near perfect. And I know I'll say that about a handful of movies, but for what this movie is supposed to be and what it tries to do, it does it. It's a romantic comedy. It's a romantic heartbreaker. You have probably the best Jim Carrey performance. As much as I love Truman Show, this is Jim Carrey probably at the best you'll ever see him. It's Kate Winslet being as amazing as Kate Winslet is.
She got nominated.
Yeah. Oh, she's so Clementine. And she's a crush. Like, to this day, I'll watch this movie and think, like, oh, I would fall in love with her in, like, a second. And then you have Elijah Wood, Mark Ruffalo's storyline, where Kristen Dunst is a smaller part in this. And generally, I would try to, like Midnight Special, she's a smaller part. So
her part's very important.
It's very, very important. And she's really, really good. So that's why. Like, it's a smaller part for her. But when she's on screen, she demands that attention. Like, she is really, really good in this movie. And her placement in the story to the overall thing, I think, makes it more of a Kristen Dunst movie despite her size of her role. Her role is bigger than it is. And that's why I have it on here, because it is such a good movie. One of those that every part has to be moving perfectly. And for the part that she plays, she nails it.
This was my two, but I'll make it my three because I know there's no way in hell my number two now will be on your list.
I hate Melancholia.
It is Melancholia. There will be a bit of a theme developing here. You mentioned a very visual director in Michel Gondry. Science of Sleep is a fantastic movie starring a young woman who's going to show up very soon on my list. Not Kirsten Dunst. But that movie is kind of tough to get from A to B on. Michel Gondry certainly has kind of a style, sort of a whimsical style. And we're going to tell a love story, but we're not going to tell it boy meets girl, boy gets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl back. It's just not that simple. When we first meet Joel and Clementine, boy has already lost girl. Boy is kind of getting girl back, but he doesn't realize it yet because he thinks it's boy meet girl at that point. Like the whole idea of Lacuna being this company that can reverse total recall you and wipe memories out. And then you see him while he's undergoing this process, kind of regretting that decision. And, you know, even with this relationship meant so much that even with the bad, I don't want to lose any of the good to wipe out the bad. So he's desperately trying to cling on to those memories as they're being taken out of him by Toby, who's using that to try and romance Clementine. He's stealing plays out of Joel's playbook. It makes him a real scumbag of a character. But I like Kirsten Dunst in this because she's kind of already gone on the same trip that Joel and Clementine have gone on. She just doesn't really realize it, much like they don't. And then she goes like full-on whistleblower, and it is certainly a very pivotal to the plot of the movie. But this is one that I think maybe could have done for Gondry what I was hoping that Midnight Special would have done for Nichols. Like, it's accessible enough, but it still gives you their style.
I think it could have if he wanted it to.
He had to kind of follow it up.
He still wanted to make these small, quirky movies where Midnight Special was the most mainstream thing Nichols has done, and you could see him following that up with something bigger. Gondry, I feel like, avoided that, but I feel like after this, it was such a critical and commercial success that I feel like he could have done... give him a superhero franchise to launch. He did Green Hornet, didn't he?
Yes, yeah. He did. It's very visual.
So my number
two
is a number two. It is from 2004, directed by Sam Raimi, starring Kristen Dunst, Tobey Maguire, James Franco, Alfred Molina, J.K. Simmons. It is Spider-Man 2. She was Mary Jane.
She was
the first big screen version of Mary Jane Watson, this redhead that I loved growing up, that I had a giant crush on, growing up reading comic books from a very, very young age. So she'll always have that spot. Looking back, she wasn't a shitty Mary Jane. This Mary Jane was just shitty. She didn't have anything to do in these movies. What she was given to do, I think Kristen Dunst did well enough.
She was a good, like, girl next door that was accessible, like you could totally see her with Toby. But I think in two specifically, she kind of had to really guilt him. You know what I mean? Like her job was to like make Peter Parker feel shitty because he's Spider-Man. And she did that with aplomb.
Yeah, I just feel like they didn't let her do much. Mary Jane was always this really cool character, and she was just relegated to just a love interest and damsel in distress pretty much. Which, at the time, it was okay because, hey, I got Spider-Man on the big screen. But, like, looking back at it, it's like, she's not that she's bad. It's just the character's bad and not really done justice. But, man, is Spider-Man 2 good? Even now, Spider-Man 2 is such a good movie. We're 15 years later, almost, with comic book movies, and they've evolved so much. But, goddamn, if I still don't have a special spot for Spider-Man 2... Alfred Molina is Doc Ock is great.
Off the top of my head, I can't think of a better comic book villain.
Ego, probably, I think.
Was he better, or was he just as good?
Maybe just as good.
I mean, the thing I love...
Keaton, the Vulture, in Homecoming, I think is pretty close.
Yeah.
For a lot of the same reasons.
Right, because with Molina, you really do... He's not inherently evil. An accident happened to him. It turned him evil. But you could still see him kind of get redeemed at the end, a bit like maybe happens with Keaton's Tombs. But I think that's what made this movie so good. You had the Joker to the Batman in this scenario. And for me, Doc Ock is like the chief antagonist of Spider-Man. You could make an argument that it's Goblin. The Goblin. Yeah. And any number of guys. But to me, it's Doc Ock. And they did a great job with him. And Raimi specifically was able to make that character not just menacing, but creepy menacing,
too. The scene in the hospital.
Absolutely.
That's so... It's Evil Dead in a comic book movie, and I love it.
It's fantastic. It has Raimi's prints all over it. This was my number one, but I'm happy to make it my number two so I can elevate my number three to my number one. But I'm not done talking about Spider-Man yet. I knew that one of these movies was going to be on my list because I didn't want to put them both on there. I like the original Spider-Man a lot. And that movie really opened the door for the comic book movies that we're getting now. If that movie's not the success that it was.
I think are the...
Yeah, but this just made so much goddamn money. And X-Men, that was a team. That could maybe survive because people like Wolverine or there's that one guy that likes Cyclops. But this was like, okay, Batman had a good run in the 80s and it kind of petered out in the 90s. But let's launch a comic book franchise. And that's certainly what Spider-Man did. But I think where this one really sets itself apart is that you do have a great villain in Doc Ock and you've got Peter kind of battling with himself. He loses his powers very early in this movie and he's kind of trying to fight to get him back, and he's trying to decide if he even wants to be Spider-Man. And from where we see him at the end of the first movie, I think that's a really interesting place to find a hero in the second of his movies, deciding if he even wants to be this hero to begin with. I don't necessarily think we're going to get that out of the Tom Holland Spider-Man, but I really liked that that's the position they put Toby in, and I think he did a wonderful job with it. So upon further review, I think Spider-Man 2 is the one I was going to put on the list, and it was my number one, but fittingly, it's now my number two.
So are we on my number one?
We are on your number one.
My number one, it is one of my favorite cheerleading movies ever from 2000, directed by Peyton Reed, written by Jessica Bindinger, starring Kristen Dunst, Elijah Dushku, Jesse Bradford, Gabrielle Union. It is Bring It On. I love this movie. I legit really, really like this movie. I don't know why. I like Stick It a lot more. That's
the gymnastics.
Yeah, that's
Bring
the,
It On.
Written by Bindinger. Like, it's her other movie that she wrote. I like it more. But this movie's really cute and charming. I like it. Like, you just have these white cheerleaders stealing the black woman's gigs and then trying to make it right when they realize that that's what's going on. I think there's a lot more to it than just cute girls in short skirts, which is how it was marketed and why it was spawned like 7 sequels. There is more to it than that. I really like it. I like Dunst in this. She's really good in that role. Eliza Dushku, I think, is great. Jesse Bradford's a competent male lead in this movie, but it's funny. I think she's a really, really gifted writer, and I wish that we would get more from her. We had this in 2000 and then Stick It in 2006, and then other than that, Truth About Charlie, First Daughter, and Aquamarine, and then I hope she's not dead, because that's nothing since then. But she's really, really good, and I'd like to see more from her, because there's some really good jokes in Bring It On. There's really good dialogue in Bring It On, and it's just a cute, heartwarming, feel-good movie.
It's a good high school movie.
Yeah, at a time when high school movies
were raunchy at that point.
Yeah, they were just turning raunchy. They had come from, we had a few, like Get Over It, that she's in, 10 Things I Hate About You, and we had a revival of high school movies, and then they got dirty, but then this was kind of like a nice little, like, innocent almost. And I like this movie, like, legitimately, not just because it's cute girls in cheerleading skirts, but it's a really good movie. She is not dead, by the way.
My number one received extra first place votes after I put my list together, which is fine. I can see, if you believe in string theory, a universe where when I sat down, Eternal Sunshine was my number one, because I really like that movie. I'd be fine with that. Spider-Man 2 in this universe was originally there, but now Melancholia is my favorite Kirsten Dunst movie, and Dave is already shaking his head. It is directed by Lars von Trier, a man that Dave hates, and I can understand why. Kirsten Dunst and Charlotte Gainsbourg star in this one. Everything I said about Midnight Special, like being an accessible Jeff Nichols movie, is accurate about Lars von Trier and Melancholia. If you didn't catch Dogville, which I think might be like the one Lars von Trier movie that Dave would actually watch and enjoy, because it is good and relatively straightforward, I think that Lars von Trier is at his best in this movie. I can understand if Antichrist and the Nymphomaniac movies aren't exactly your thing. To be honest, they really shouldn't be anyone's thing. He makes some very, very strange movies with some very, very rough subject matter. But if there's another thing you can say about Lars von Trier movies, is that they are shot wonderfully. He takes some awful things and makes them look beautiful. And that just shouldn't be. The beginning of Antichrist, it's one of the best graphic shower sex scenes that's ever been filmed. It's shot wonderfully. And then there's a rather unfortunate thing that happens after that as well that in no way, shape, or form should be enjoyable. And it's not, but he shoots the hell out of it. That's just what he does. And in this movie, the scenes on the golf course at the end are some of the best looking shots you're ever going to see in a movie. It's not to say that flashy images are all that this movie has going for it. Of all my movies, this is the one that features Dunst the most. It's got a limited cast, so that figures. And just because of lack of numbers, she really has to carry the Melancholia of this movie. And she does. She is wonderful. In one second, she's stoic. The next second, she's completely batshit crazy. From the moment we meet Justine, we know that she's not quite right in the head. And we see her sister, Claire, who falls more and more into depression as she accepts the fact that Earth is about to end as this other planet, Melancholia, is going to smash into it. Justine basically gets better and better. She starts to show even some relief towards the end. It's certainly a movie that's not for everyone, but it honestly is a great movie. It's not just a good movie. It is great. Gainsbourg and Dunst are incredible, and of the Depression trilogy, which I've mentioned, this is the one that's going to make you feel the least uncomfortable, because it's just not as graphic, and you can make the argument that sometimes he's graphic for the sake of being graphic. This is none of that. This is just a director showing what he can do, and it is still, I mean, you mentioned that she's only been nominated for a Golden Globe twice. I don't think people give her a ton of credit for being a great actress, but she is really good in this. It's tough to stand out in a movie that's so visually striking as Melancholia, but she really does put in a very good performance. Any that you left off other than Melancholia? Because I know it's just circling around your list.
Wag the Dog. She's a very, very bit part, but I like that movie and try to bring it up anytime I can. Get Over It. Cisco CGI'd in there, but mostly because of Ben Foster. It was him in a high school teen comedy. I had Midnight Special, Elizabethtown. I like Cameron Crowe and Orlando Bloom. Like, it was one of the weaker ones of Cameron Crowe, but still enjoyable. And one that I left off because I thought it'd be on your list. I still like My Five better than this, but Sofia Coppola's The Virgin Suicides was still really, really good.
Jumanji, I enjoy. She's got a fairly large role in that. I really didn't have a lot that I left off. I mean, I knew what your number one was going to be as soon as we mentioned the list. So I like me some Bring It On as much as the next guy. Maybe not as much as Dave, but there wasn't too terribly many that I left off. But I like her movies. I really like the five that are on here.
And I mean, she had a run where, like, there's ones that they're not for me, but she had this audience, like Dick and Drop Dead Gorgeous. She had this audience that she was making movies for. Crazy Beautiful.
Yeah,
like,
even the romantic comedy stuff. Wimbledon's not bad, if you like that.
No, but that one I always get confused with Woody Allen's ScarJo movie. Was that Match Point?
Yes. Wimbledon's Kirsten Dunst and Paul Bettany.
And then
that's
the other
solid
one is ScarJo and Matthew Good, I think.
Yeah, Matthew Good. I guess we can both agree that Melancholia, great movie. Next week, we can both agree on Kingsman. We both love that an awful lot. The Golden Circle. I feel like I've been so hyped for this movie for so long.
It feels like we've seen trailers for months.
Yeah, and I've somehow managed to forget about it. And like now I'm hype again that it's coming out next week. So we'll get you ready with a Kingsman primer before Golden Circle comes out. And then, speaking of primers, we're going to do our fall preview, which we're going to run down basically the rest of the year. We get into kind of the award season movies, and I'm sure just because that's what we do, we'll kind of maybe give you some early, hey, look out for this by the time Oscars come around. And then after our fall preview, we are into
October,
yeah, which is going to be kind of a fun month. We're already, I mean, spoiler alert, it's August when we record this, but we're already kind of putting in some work.
Working on it for a month already.
Right, yeah. We're already putting in work on the October episodes, which if you know us at all, you know that us working ahead is a bit of a rarity. So that's how excited we are for our October episodes. Those are always really fun. Some of our favorite times of the year here on Movies On Up. But between the fall preview, which is one of our yearly favorites, and then October, and Kingsman preceding that, a movie that we both like an awful lot, I think it's going to be some really, really fun episodes in a row to record. So I know we're going to have a lot of fun. We hope you do as well. And we'll see you next week with Kingsman. But until then,
keep it up.